Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by West Elm Local Experiences. What the heck is that, you ask? Well, I'll tell you later in the episode, along with how you can win a $600 West Elm gift card and an awesome vacation to Charleston, South Carolina. Flights, hotels, the works. You can find out more and enter to win at westelm.com/YHL. I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
We all make changes to our homes that might not appeal to the masses, but today we're talking about when you should change things back for potential buyers, plus why stores might stop accepting your returns, and how I got a birthday call from a real housewife.
I felt like I needed a little jolt of sugar before we started recording, so I had a Laffy Taffy.
Mm.
It was a bad idea.
Why are those in our house?
They're left over from Halloween is why they're in our house.
I feel like in all my minimizing and simplifying, they should not still be left over in our house.
It's like sugary peanut butter. My mouth feels all sticky now.
It's like malted.
Yes.
Ugh.
If I'm inarticulate today, guys, that's my excuse.
Mm-mm. Was it banana?
It was banana.
They're the worst.
Oh, I love banana artificial flavoring. It's my favorite artificial flavoring.
Well, you don't like banana runts. This makes no sense.
No, I love banana runts.
Oh, I like banana
runts. You're thinking of another boyfriend.
I'm thinking of my other husband who hates banana runts. Right. His name is Burger. He's four-legged. He's a chihuahua.
Should we tell everyone about our trip to Austin?
Dude, Austin is awesome. Everyone tells us that. We've only been there twice in our lives. And this time it totally redeemed itself. That is a Dumb and Dumber reference because the first time we went, it rained the entire time.
Yeah, we were there for our book tour in 2013, but now 2018, 5 years later, we were there again for a blog conference. And I still kind of chuckle at the idea of blog conferences, but we've been to so many over the past few years. They just seem like normal, but I'm sure there's lots of people listening who are like, why do bloggers have conferences?
It's basically like back-end blog stuff that's, coding and changing things and stuff I don't even understand. I was like, John, I don't even want to go. And then he was like, but all your friends are going to be there. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to go for the social atmosphere.
Well, I think most blog conferences have become about the social atmosphere. This one was much more technical and website focused. So there was a lot of learning and classes and taking notes. It was almost like being back in college for 3 days. But there were also lots of cool industry leaders. The keynote speaker was Randy Zuckerberg, as in Mark's sister from Facebook.
She was really nice. It was an awesome girl power message. She has written a children's book that we have loved for years called Dot. If you don't have the children's book Dot, go get it. We have loved it. And I almost wanted to bring it in my suitcase in the hopes that she'd sign it. But of course, we didn't get to meet her. So I would have just been carrying around a children's book at a conference.
You would have fit right in. There was also one of the first employees of Pinterest was there. She was super cool.
Yes, her name was Enid. And the second I saw her on stage, I recognized her from her Pinterest avatar, which I understand is a strange sentence. But I've been on Pinterest since basically the beginning. And then after she talked and gave all these great insights about Pinterest and how it's changing and what it's doing, I was waiting in line to talk to her. And she said, Sherry from Young House Love. And it was she recognized me from my avatar. I just thought it was so funny that neither of us have met in the flesh, but from our pictures on Pinterest, we knew each other's faces.
That is the nerdiest story you have ever told.
I used the word avatar a bunch of times.
Right. But I think our favorite part, besides all the stuff that we were able to learn and sort of just cool news about the blogging industry, is we did get to see a lot of our old blogging friends that we've known now for a decade in some cases, and also meet new people. We got to hang out with our friends, the Bowers, Katie and Jeremy from Bower Power. We got to hang out with Chris and Julia from Chris Loves Julia. Another couple that we met at a previous conference, Amanda and Corey from a blog called Love and Renovations. Jen from House of Wood.
Yeah, all of our friends were there. Sarah from Ugly Duckling. Michael Worm from Inspired by Charm. Mandy from Vintage Revivals. There were the Classic Clutter Girls. Cassie from Cassie Sugar Plum. It just was a blogging reunion almost. And there was learning for John. And I feel like I was there for the food.
Well, I forgot to mention, we also got to meet Ella Bower, the newest Bower baby.
I know, she's so cute. And also, I was surprised. I walked downstairs into the lobby and a whole bunch of people wearing party hats said, surprise, happy birthday. And I turned around and I said, whose birthday is it? And it was mine, guys.
Right. Well, this was the Friday after your birthday had been on the Monday. So you had forgotten because we were in a different city. It had felt months since your birthday had passed.
Exactly. It took us a full day to get to Austin. It was only supposed to take 6 hours, but we were in airports all day long. I was 100 years old by the time I got to Austin.
Yeah, if you guys saw on Instagram, we had to leave on the day that a nor'easter hit the East Coast. And so in Richmond, we were getting snow actively as we were flying out.
School was canceled as we were leaving.
Yeah, it complicated all the babysitting technicalities of this trip. But anyways, we got there, but our flight got delayed out of Richmond for de-icing. I know that's important, but still, it made us miss our connection in Charlotte. So we got stuck in the Charlotte airport for like
all
6 hours.
All day. Guys, I was redecorating it. I was there all day.
Well, at some point, we thought we were going to have to sleep there, but you sweet talked a gate agent into getting us tickets to Austin at the last minute.
I did. And guys, he reminded me of Mauricio from Housewives, who is my favorite husband. So it's very easy to sweet talk him because I just pretended it was Mauricio. And he totally got us 2 tickets on the very last direct flight. We were going to have to take 2 connecting flights and not get there till the morning. And our buns got on that plane by the skin of our teeth. We got in almost at midnight. And then the fun began.
Yeah, but by the time Sherry's surprise happened on Friday, we had totally forgotten that Sherry's birthday had just happened.
And it was so cute because Katie Bauer had gotten cupcakes from Magnolia, not Magnolia Bakery from New York, but like Magnolia, the Silos, Chip and Joanna, who are in, I think, Waco.
Yeah, Waco, I think, is what, like maybe an hour or 2 hours
like
from Austin?
Like 2 hours, but somehow she had coordinated to get these cupcakes from there to surprise me for my birthday. And in her luggage, she had bought hats and like party stuff, little plates and napkins. And it was like the cutest thing. I was so flattered. I truly could not believe it was for me. And then right after that, we all went to dinner. And that's where the true crazy moment happened.
Yes, this was not planned, but we just ordered an Uber to take us for dinner. And what shows up? A Tesla.
Like X series or something. We don't know this.
Model X. We're not car people, but even we knew that a Tesla was a cool thing to show up. And it was this bright candy apple red with white leather seats. And as it pulls up, the doors start to open and they open like a DeLorean, guys.
Like Back to the Future doors that open up into the sky, like a Lamborghini showed up to pick us up.
Well, those are slightly different. Those open differently.
Oh, you're right.
Yes,
you're right.
I learned that the DeLorean doors, as we have been calling them, are actually called Falcon Wing doors.
Oh.
And so, I mean, this was just the Uber we called. So we were like, I guess Ubers in Austin are really cool or something. We later got a minivan. So that theory was debunked. But it turns out that the driver is this guy that's starting a business where he does like fancy concierge rides places, like on a single charge, because the Tesla is electric. He can take people from Austin to Dallas.
300 miles before he has to charge again. It's insane.
So he was like chatting us up the whole drive. There's like a giant iPad screen in the middle of the dashboard. Like picture like 2 iPads next to each other. And that's like the map and all that stuff. Like it was the coolest car I had seen ever in my life.
But it was also like very embarrassing to exit that car in front of a restaurant because like the doors open up and everyone waits for Beyonce to get out and we like stumble out.
That's like us and baby Ella like getting the car seat out.
And literally, I'm so embarrassed. So I'm going by all the tables who are outside staring at us and I'm saying, it's just an Uber. We just called an Uber and that's what came.
Right. Like the guy was trying to show it off. He literally said, I'm going to drop you off on this corner so more people can see. And we were like, no, that's okay. It's okay. He ended up dropping us off 3 blocks from our actual destination.
It was like the walk of shame out of the coolest car.
Right. It's like, oh, well, now we're going to walk here a little ways, get to our restaurant.
It was really funny.
And also getting into the Uber because all the other bloggers were waiting there. I was embarrassed because I was like, oh my gosh, people are thinking, oh, John and Sherry, such high rollers, like call this Tesla. And I did realize afterwards that I had made a mistake when I ordered it. I'd accidentally scrolled from the economy Ubers to the premium Ubers, and I did press an Uber select. So it was like $8 more than the other trip we would have taken. So I guess it was my fault. I haven't used Uber in a long time, guys. I'm very bad at it.
You should have taken credit and said, for your birthday, I got you a Tesla.
If I was that smooth, I would have. But we'll put pictures of it in the show notes if you missed it on Instagram. I think Sherry even has a video of the doors opening because the guy literally was like, I will step out of the car and do that again so you can videotape it. Like he was all about showing off his car.
He loved it.
And we were all about having it shown off to us.
Yeah. Until we got out and then we were like, please drop us off somewhere incognito.
More subtle, please, next time.
So embarrassing.
But anyways, enough about our trip to Austin. Let's get into one of my favorite segments. As you guys know, it is called Can We Just Talk About? So guys, can we just talk about returns? As in taking things back to the store. We touched on this briefly back in episode 83, where we were talking about buying things online and how one of the nice safeguards of purchasing things online is that you can return them if they don't work out. So Sherry and I, we rely on this a lot, I would say. Well, maybe not a lot.
I don't think we we abuse it, but there are certainly instances where if I see four pillows I like, I'll buy all four knowing I need two, and I will go home and have a little pillow fashion show. I'll leave the tags on. Nobody's jumping on them and getting them dirty, but then I immediately will put two back in the bag and return them.
Yeah, my analogy is that when you're buying clothes, you get to try it on in the store so that you don't have to purchase things that don't work out. You can't do that with home stuff. Like, you can't lug your house to the store and try it on. So you have to lug the things home, try it on in your house, and if they don't work out, you take them back.
Exactly.
So again, I don't think, like Sherry said, we abuse this system, but we certainly rely on the ability to return. And so when I read an article recently in the Wall Street Journal, it rattled me to my core.
Wow.
Yes.
John's rattled, guys, to his core.
To my very core. It was entitled, How Your Returns Are Used Against You. And basically what it said is that some retailers are starting to track people's return habits, and they're cutting people off who start to abuse it.
Mm.
They were mostly calling out Best Buy as the example here, and they told a story about a gentleman who purchased a lot of cell phone cases for Christmas gifts, and then he had a few extras or colors that people didn't want, and he went back to return them. And even though he had a receipt and was within the window, he got denied because he said he'd been flagged for abuse. And he was like, what's the problem here? I'm returning like $45 worth of phone cases. It's not a big deal. I have the receipt. And they said,
still in their packages and everything?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Huh. But they said, no way, Buster.
Did they say Buster?
They do. That's
Buster
official,
Brown.
That's official Best Buy terminology. And so in reading this article, they said that a lot of retailers, including Home Depot.
Whoa.
Yes, they use this firm called the Retail Equation that tracks people's returns. And in cases like Best Buy, could be used against them.
Here's my thing, though. They need to factor in how much you buy and a percentage of what you return.
Yes.
Because I would argue that we purchase a lot of things from Target, like a high ratio of things from Target, especially when we're filling up the beach house. So yeah, I had a lot of returns to Target because I was filling up a house. You know, same thing with when we did the show house. We purchased a lot of things for that show house and we returned what might look like a lot. But if you look at the ratio, oh, they spent $1,000 and they returned $100. That's not crazy. I think they'd be glad that we spent $900 there.
Well, what you're getting into, some of the things they outline in the article, is that there are particular activities that might flag someone. And they're not saying this is the specific formula that Best Buy uses. And they said other retailers like Home Depot may not use it at all in this manner. It may just simply be to track returns and get data for themselves. So this is not saying like Home Depot is suddenly going to crack down on returns. But they said there are certain activities that might flag someone because at the end of the day, they're trying to prevent fraud, which I didn't realize. Like, a lot of people abuse return systems to return things that have been used, things that they stole, and then want to get the money back.
Oh, right. Like, you walk out with a TV and then you're like, I need to return this TV.
Right, exactly. So these are the things they said that might flag you at some stores. One is returning a large percentage of your total purchases.
Okay, that makes sense.
So just like you said, like, we bought maybe four shopping carts worth of things in one trip at Target when we were doing the show house, but we returned only half a shopping cart. So it wasn't a huge percentage of our total purchases.
Right. And to be clear, guys, for the show house, we weren't buying things, putting them in the show house for months and then returning them. This was like things that off the bat didn't work, got returned. Everything else got purchased and then donated to charity.
Right. They also said returning a high dollar amount. So returning a really large item might flag you.
Huh.
Returning items without a receipt.
Everyone monitors that, though. I feel like even Target, they demand your license if you don't have the receipt. And it's, I think you only get two a year that way or something.
I think they might have been more flexible on that, but maybe they crack down on certain individuals. Who knows?
Right. Well, now I think everyone can track credit cards more. So it's getting easier, I found. Like, even without your receipt, if you buy it on your Target card, they can track it. Same thing at Home Depot. We use the Home Depot card and then they can track it.
Yeah. Returning items after a long period of time, so something that you've had for a while, because that might indicate you've used it and then are returning it back after the fact.
Right.
Returning items that tend to get stolen at the retailer, which I think might have been the case with that guy at Best Buy who was trying to return phone cases.
Oh, they think people walk out with those and then return them for the money.
Yep. And this one I thought was really interesting. Returning items right when the store is closing.
Huh.
Because I guess maybe you're trying to sneak in when their guard is down and like, oh, just do this real quick. I don't want to hold you up from closing the store.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, maybe that's what thieves do.
That seems weird to me.
I'm trying to get into the mindset of the criminal so that I don't get flagged as a criminal.
I'm more like they'd be all grouchy. It's the end of their shift. They just want to go home.
Exactly. So they don't bother to double check.
I guess. Okay.
So I'll put a link to this article from the Wall Street Journal. Again, it's about how your returns might be used against you in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. after I read the whole thing, I did calm down because I think it will be fine. I don't think we do a lot of the practices that do flag people, but I thought everyone should be aware, especially those stylists out there that buy lots of product at once.
Yeah, I've heard that Anthropologie cuts people off if they buy too much because they tag them as stylists and they realize that they're using them and then photographing them and returning them. And I think it's a gray area because if you keep the tags on and don't hurt them and it's a day, I don't know. I go back and forth because I'm like, if it's fine merchandise to resell, why not? But then I'm kind of like, yeah, but if your whole business is buying and returning things, it's hard.
Yeah, what we're talking about is when we've had magazine shoots, for instance, at our house, the stylist whose job it is to make the picture look pretty, to, you know, put the objects in a way that makes a photo nice, they oftentimes will buy like boatloads of stuff.
Boatloads. And I think some things are sent for free. Like they'll contact someone like Dash and Albert, and Dash and Albert will send a runner and just for the press. But other times the bags are from World Market or Pottery Barn and they will just go in there and buy a bunch of stuff. And they will say like, you know, magazines used to have all this money. We used to keep it or gift it to the homeowner. Now almost everything needs to be returned unless they remove the tags or damage it in some way. It goes back to the store. So I think some stores don't mind it for the press. Other stores do mind it for the annoyance of, you know, 100% returns. So
yeah, I mean, I do feel for the retail employees who have to deal with all that stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of restocking. As a former retail employee, my heart bleeds for them because there's a whole lot of stuff to put back.
But now we're going to take a listener question that came to us via voicemail. And for anyone who ever wants to leave us a voicemail, you can just call area code 571-4-YHL-HAP and leave your message there. But this one today comes from someone named Jacqueline.
Hi, John and Sherry. This is Jacqueline Cohen from Vermont. We've been in our house 6 years now, and we've changed the normal function of some parts of our house. We think it's for the better, but now we're looking at selling our house and wonder if we should revert them back. For instance, there was a small linen closet in our living room that we converted to a media closet, and we put the linens and vacuum in one of the two his and hers closets in our master bedroom. Even though both of our clothes can fit in one closet, we worry that homebuyers will think it's not roomy enough, and they will think there's a lack of overall storage in our house. What do you think? When do you consider a change beneficial to a broad audience? And when is a change too specific for buyers? Thanks.
I love this question because I feel like it gets to a core worry that a lot of us have when we're making major changes to our house. You know, like how might this impact a future buyer's decision to buy our house, even if that future buyer is decades away? So I think I would say for Jacqueline or for anyone who's asking themselves this question, it depends on two main things. Does the change remove an essential function of the house? Like a basic amenity that people expect when they're shopping for a house, are you removing it?
Right.
And the second thing is, if you are going to remove it, how hard would it be for the new owners to reverse it?
An example would be if there's only one bathroom on the first floor and you renovate it and make it a pantry and there are zero bathrooms on the first floor, that's hard to undo.
Yeah.
There's not like the sink in the toilet anymore.
Yeah, that's not like a fresh coat of paint will fix everything.
Right.
Like, for example, we actually looked at a house when we were shopping for the home that we live in now that had converted their garage into a movie theater room. And they actually acknowledged the fact that it was a little bit of a weird change. They had a sign when you walked into the garage that said, this room can be easily converted back to a garage.
And it was a beautiful house, and that wasn't the deal breaker for us, but it sat on the market forever. Yes. And everyone said, it's that theater room. Even though you have a sign that says this can be converted, just convert it. Everybody uses their garage for the yard stuff, for the bikes, for the sporting equipment. So I feel like if they had converted it back instead of having a sign that said you could convert it back,
right,
it probably would have sold much faster.
And to be clear, in this house that we're talking about, it looked like garage doors from the outside, but they had drywalled over them from the inside.
Right. So it would have been more than just take the couch and the TV out and put your car in.
Right.
There was more involved than that.
Right. And like Sherry said, having a garage was an essential function for homes in this area. So I think that's why it took a long time to sell.
Yeah. And the person who bought it converted it back. It was just what everyone needed to happen. I think it just would have sold much faster if someone did it for the buyer.
But let's talk about Jacqueline's case because it's a little bit of a smaller issue. She's just talking about sort of using closets in a different way. To me, it sounds like it's not really worth the trouble to switch it back when they go to sell the house, because in my opinion, a closet is a closet is a closet. Like, I don't care how you're using it. I, as a potential buyer, can see that that's a place I can store whatever I want in it.
And I will be devil's advocate here. As a stager, I would say that people look in closets and they get the cue about how they'll use the closet. So my advice to Jacqueline would be to just remove the vacuum and the cleaning supplies from the his and hers closets and have two his and hers closets, even if there's only 5 shirts in each side to indicate, oh, this is a his and hers situation. I think that is a luxury to have a his and hers closet, and I think it's a selling feature. And so if you can find another place for the vacuum, do it. If you need to put the vacuum in your car, do it. I don't think people will notice, oh, there's not a place for the vacuum, but they will notice it's nice in the master to have a his and hers. So that's just from a stager's point of view. You also could do the thing that sometimes I suggest, which is like put it on the market a few weeks the way it is. And if you're getting feedback over and over again that this is bothering people, it's a very easy thing to change. At that point, you put the vacuum in the car and you sell the house.
I don't know. See, maybe it's the man in me, but I'm like, it speaks to me that, wow, there's so much extra closet space that I can have a media closet. Like, that's a bonus.
Right. I love the media closet. Yeah. I actually wouldn't change that because I think it's a smart use of space.
Especially if it's off the living room.
Exactly. It's like how I would never change. We have 2 coat closets in our foyer, and one of them we converted to a game closet, and we added shelves for storing board games and toys. I would never change that back to a second coat closet because I actually think there is value in a closet with that sort of storage for toys and kids, and it's right off the main areas of the house versus 2 coat closets seems weird. You don't need 2 coat closets.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, I still feel like this is not a big issue when it will come to sell the house because it's not like she's removing a kitchen or a garage. It's just a closet and she can make the swap pretty easily if she needs to when the time comes.
Exactly.
Ultimately, you should rely on some of the expertise of the realtor that you're working with because they will know the area. They will know whether this is a weird decision or whether you should take the time to switch it back before you put the house on the market.
And speaking of working with realtors, since I'm doing it often with these staging projects, I actually work with one realtor exclusively and she and I have a really good rapport. We're friends. But there are times where we don't agree. And there are times in hindsight where I see that she was right. And there are times in hindsight where what I suggested sells the house. So it's not a perfect science. One example I can give you is I was staging a kitchen and the woman had moved the island out of the kitchen. It was one you could just pick up off the floor.
Like a rolling butcher block or something?
It didn't roll, but it was liftable. Like it wasn't connected.
One of those handy liftable islands.
So she actually had moved it out of the kitchen area because when she was pregnant, getting into the stove was so tight with the island. Opening the stove and her pregnant belly there was too much for her. So she moved the island. When she was putting the room back together, the realtor said, I really think you should put the island back in the kitchen. And I said, oh, really? I don't think it needs to go there. I think we could set it up off to the side as sort of like a bar area with stools. Then we moved it back into the kitchen just to see it. And immediately I was like, it's better in the kitchen. So in that instance, we both kind of jockeyed ideas, saw it in the kitchen, and then both came to an agreement. So I don't think every time what your stager says is right. I don't think every time what your realtor says is right, because I'll give an opposite example. In a house that we just helped our close friend sell, there was a room. You guys have all seen this on the blog, and I'll put the link in our show notes, but it's a homework room, and it had been an office, and before that, it had been a formal dining room.
Yeah, at some point, someone put an addition on the house, so it originally was the dining room, but when they added the addition, it was like kind of right off the master bedroom now, and so it didn't make sense to have the dining room right off the master bedroom, so they had started using it as an office and moved the dining function elsewhere in the house.
Right. And so when our friends moved in and we were helping them get settled, we were like, oh, I think in this sunroom is a great place for the dining spot. There's lighting overhead. It's really bright and it's connected to the kitchen. It's an open floor plan where if you're in that dining area at that table, you can see the large kitchen island and the kitchen. So it's open to one another.
Yeah. It's more of a breakfast nook, I would say, than a dining room though.
Right. So it's not a formal dining room. Exactly. It's more like an eat-in kitchen with a big table or a breakfast nook type situation, but it seats like 8. So in that way, it can be used for a big dinner party. It just doesn't look super formal. There's not a chandelier. Right. There's not drapes. There's not a deep colored burgundy wall. Like it's just a sunny, bright place to eat within the kitchen area.
Right. And that other dining space that they were now using as a homework room made much more sense as the homework room because it was more closed off from the kitchen. Again, it was right next to the bedroom.
Right. And so the realtor said, I think you should convert this back to a formal dining room, this beautiful homework room that whenever my friend has people over, they love the homework room. And we loved making it over. And so I kind of was like, am I taking this personally that she wants me to like delete this room that everyone loves? Is my personal opinion that it's a cute room getting in the way of recognizing that it would sell better with a formal dining room? And I really mulled it over and I said, you know what? I really think that a dining room off of the bedroom in that way, closed off from the kitchen, is not what people want these days. I think that the average buyer, especially with children, and this house is made for children, has a big playset in the backyard. It's a great school district. I argued that I think people buying this house would want an open dining space to the kitchen versus a closed off one. And I think they would feel weird walking through a formal dining room to get to the master on the first floor. It just was kind of a wonky floor plan that way.
Yeah, I think her argument mostly in wanting to be converted back, because really she was just asking that the light be swapped out for like a more chandelier pendant type light and for the furniture to change out to look like a dining space, because it had, you know, sort of some floating desks in the middle and some bookshelves with kids' books and art supplies. So some furniture would have to change and the light would have to change. But other than that, not a big switch. I think what she was looking for is the ability on the listing to just check off dining room, because otherwise it didn't really technically have a dining room. And that's one of those like core spaces that people might just expect in a house. So I think on paper, her argument made sense. But like you were saying, in the actual floor plan and flow of the house, it was a little bit weird.
Right. Like in person, I worried it would make people not like the floor plan, even though in the listing, it might make people say like, oh, good, it has a formal dining room. Right. I felt like once they saw the house, it would sell itself as is.
Yeah.
And so I said, what if we compromise? What if in 2 weeks, if it doesn't sell, I will change it. I will move everything. I'll buy the chandelier. I'll restage it. Give it 2 weeks, because I have a really strong feeling this house will sell quickly. We did take some things off the wall. You know, I love to lighten up a room. So if you see the pictures, I'm actually planning to write a post about staging. I'll show you how I styled it for the blog and showed it as a homework room in use. And then I will show how I staged it, because it's like homework room light. I did remove things and make it airier. And so in doing that, I just felt like it would sell itself. And she said, sure, that's a great solution. We'll wait 2 weeks. It sold in 12 hours. So like I was thrilled and I was so relieved, because I didn't want to, you know, do the walk of shame back in 2 weeks and move everything around. Like, you were right.
I guess we'll make it a dining room again.
Exactly. So that's an example of how realtors always have your best interest in mind. They're always trying to help. But if something in your gut is saying like, no, I really think I would buy this house because of the way I changed it, maybe don't be so quick to change it back just from one person's opinion. Do the 2 week thing. Live with it for 2 weeks as is on the market, and then be really honest with yourself. If you're getting feedback back that says, where's the dining room? Where's the dining room?
Where's the linen closet off the living room?
Right. Like any feedback you get, you have to realize that once it comes in one or two times, it's an issue for many buyers.
And it's also something you could offer as a concession as part of the sale. For instance, one of the sticking points in our second house for us was that it didn't have an enclosed garage. It just had a carport. And so one of the things that the sellers were willing to do, because they knew that was a sticking point for the house, the carport, was they offered us a stipend so that we could convert it. They had gotten a quote for converting it to an enclosed garage, and they gave us that money back at closing so that we could put it towards it. Did we? No.
We didn't. We intended to.
We intended to, but we just lived with the carport the whole time, because actually I ended up enjoying a carport more than I thought I would.
But it was not the best for like kids' bikes and stuff.
No. But again, that was just another alternative to, if you have this change to your house or this feature of this house that people are getting caught up on, that's one option, is to say, we're aware this might be the cost to fix it, and we're willing to offer that at closing or as a discount to the sale price, whatever it is. Again, I don't think you'll have to do that over closets, Jacqueline.
Yeah, I think the main thing is just to think about how someone with fresh eyes would see your house. The media closet sounds so smart. That might be even a selling feature for someone. Like, oh, great, a place to hide all my wires and junk. That's like, they put those in new houses. You know, that's a perk. But I do think his and hers closets are also pretty selling. And when I'm staging, I would definitely make a big deal out of that.
It does have his and hers closet. His closet is just in the living room and it's full of media stuff.
That's probably true.
So thank you for your question, Jacqueline. Again, if any of you guys have one that you'd like us to tackle on a future episode of the podcast, you can leave us a voicemail any hour of the day. Area code 571-4-YHL-HAP.
And also, if you guys forget that number, you can always go to Instagram. On Instagram, there's a contact button. Ours is that number. So like once a week, someone says, oh my gosh, your home phone number's on Instagram. And I say, no, that's the voicemail for the podcast so people can ask us questions. So if you can't remember it, just go to Instagram, hit the contact button. It should say call. It's that 571 number, and you can leave us a voicemail.
And before we get into We're Digging this week, I wanted to say a real quick announcement that we are taking next week off. So the week of April 9th, there will be no podcast. We're going to be on spring break. So we're taking a little breather.
Ooh, ooh.
But we will be back on April 16th with a new episode. Okay.
Did you like how I used a club music soundtrack for our spring break with children?
But anyways, we're going to come back with We're Digging. Cherry is digging what I got her for her birthday, which I'm very flattered by.
You guys won't believe it.
But first, we're going to take a quick break. Okay, pop quiz, Sherry. What is West Elm?
West Elm, we go way back. A story we shopped at for over a decade, and they're this week's sponsor.
Yes, but do you know what West Elm Local is?
I do not. John told me nothing so he could do this ad segment for you.
Yes. So West Elm Local is a program they've been doing for 5 years where they highlight makers and artists in the communities that their stores are located.
Yeah, I went in one once that had like a cool leather satchel, and it was like just a local girl who makes them and sells them through West Elm.
Yeah, it's a way of them connecting their shoppers to the people and the artists in their own backyards. But now they're launching a thing called West Elm Local Experiences, which takes this thing to a whole new level because you can actually spend time with these makers and even learn some of their skills in these artist workshops that they host.
Oh, that's so fun. It's like crafting taken to a new level.
Yeah, they're kicking it off in 5 super cool cities: Austin, Savannah, Detroit, Charleston, and New York. Each city with unique artists and unique skill like painting, woodworking, welding, and more. And to kick the whole thing off, they're doing a huge giveaway.
Oh yeah, I know about the giveaway. So someone's going to win a trip to Charleston, South Carolina to be wine, dined, put up in an awesome boutique hotel. I've seen the pictures. I'm supremely jealous. And they get the local artist Raven Roxanne, who's going to give them an insider tour of Charleston and her studio.
Yeah, the trip is valued at $4,000, and they're even throwing in a $600 West Elm gift card on top of it. So you can get all the details and enter at westelm.com/YHL now through May 15th. Again, that's westelm.com/YHL. I know we do this a lot where we tease one digging thing and then start with the other, but I am going to start with mine.
Because it's housey. Well, and mine is not housey.
No, mine is going to feel very boring in comparison to yours.
Yeah, we have to end on mine. Yeah. Big buildup, but guys, it will deliver.
Okay, so are you guys ready for the boring thing that I'm digging this week?
But it's helpful. It's useful.
It's useful. It's functional. It is mail order box springs. I know. I'll wait for the applause to settle down out there in podcast listener world. Right? That's... And the crowd goes wild for the box springs that come by mail. Okay, I won't make this very long, but the reason I bring this up is because I didn't know for a long time that you could order a box spring on the internet and would be delivered to your house just like any other thing you might order on Amazon. I think for years, the only way a box spring ever made it into my house was because it arrived as a set with a mattress. I know maybe that sounds really dumb, but it wasn't until a few years ago when we were switching from a platform bed to a more traditional metal frame bed that we needed just a box spring. We already had the mattress. And so Sherry, like a normal person would think about this, went onto Amazon and bought a box spring.
And it came like small, flat packed. You do assemble it, but we don't mind assembling things. I think what I had actually done, not like a normal person, is I had called a store and asked how much it was for a box spring, but I couldn't get over the fact that it was not only the price of the box spring, but the delivery fee. Because they're like, whether it's 10 mattresses in a truck or one box spring in a truck, we're still bringing the truck to your house.
Yeah, so, it's like a flat $99 delivery, which you're like, that's the price of the box spring.
Right. It was really frustrating me. And then I went on Amazon. I think first I went on Overstock and a few other places, but I like Amazon because I have so many ratings, so many stars to read about to make sure I wasn't going to get like a collapsible box spring that we hated one day into it. So we ordered one. Since we were converting our bed from a platform, we wanted a box spring. So we used it in our own bedroom for many, many months. It's been over a year now that we've had it. It's been great. So like now I feel like we can endorse it. It works.
Yeah. So I will put a link to the one that we purchased in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. There are a lot out there. So I'm not saying you have to get this one, although we've been very happy with it. I mostly just bring this up because if you, like me, feel like you're stuck in this situation where the only option for getting one is at a traditional mattress store and paying that delivery fee, there are other options. You can just get it with your Amazon Prime or whatever.
And now for the moment you've all really been waiting for.
I think people are satisfied with the box spring thing. Let's just save yours to next week. Well, 2 weeks because we'll be on vacation. So we'll see you guys later. Bye.
No, this is like the coolest thing that ever happened to me, you guys. So John discovered from actually a podcast that we listened to that there's this website called bookcameo.com.
Book Cameo.
And basically, they have a lot of famous people. They're like people from The Bachelor, Big Brother, Amazing Race, a lot of housewives, musicians, actors, sports figures, not like A-listers, but like...
Not even B or C-listers.
I mean, the housewives are A-listers to me. Like, they are my celebrities. And so we discovered that I guess for like $40 or $50...
It depends on the star.
You can pay and they will leave you a personalized video message. So like a celebrity can say, "Hey, Sherry, I heard it's your birthday." And like to me, I cry if somebody does that to me that I love, let alone a celebrity I watch on TV. Like I freak out at the thought of that. And so we're sitting at the airport Flight's delayed for 10 hours. And John says, oh, I got you this other little birthday present and it's late, but here it is. And he put earbuds in my ear and pushed play on my phone. And I got a video message from someone I consider to be a giant celebrity.
Yeah, I feel like we should just play it. And if you're a Housewives person, you will recognize the voice.
You will know who this is.
Okay, so here it is.
Hi, Sherry. Happy birthday. I heard you're turning 36 on 319 and that you met your husband in New York City. So New York City is your favorite franchise. Of course it is. And that you love my song, Don't Be So Uncool, You Broke the Girl Code. I love that song too. And that you loved my moment in the bushes. Yeah, that's what happens when you drink too much tequila. But it was a fun time. Anyway, happy birthday. Wishing you all the best and congrats.
You guys, it's Luann from New York Housewives. And not only does she say happy birthday to me, she sings to me. We bond over how she fell in the bushes, and I thought it was the best moment on television ever. We bonded. And this is a video message, you guys. Like, I see her face looking at me. It's like 30 seconds long. I feel like I would have spent $500 for this, so the fact that it was only 50.
Yeah, can I explain it a little bit, too?
It's amazing.
I knew Sherry would love it, so I knew it was worth the $50.
I will treasure this forever.
Well, and I know that you were trying to simplify, so I didn't want to buy you a thing. I wanted to buy you an experience.
It's the best experience of my life.
And I also want to give advice to anyone else who might book one of these themselves or for a, you know, another family member or something as a gift. You don't get a lot of room to give information. You just like give your name, the name of the person it's going to, and you're supposed to provide instructions and be creative is what it says. I didn't know what instructions meant. I didn't know that Luann was basically going to read it verbatim.
I mean, it felt like it came from her heart.
Well, that's why she says 319 and not March 19th as a normal person would speak it, because I had to like change it to meet the word count in it.
You got a lot in there.
I did.
She sang. I mean, I was completely flattered. I felt like that was the breath of Luann's character. I got her singing, talking about drinking too much and falling in the bushes.
See, I took the approach of let me flatter her so that she might have some energy. I don't know if that's how all the cameo stars work.
It was phenomenal.
Yep.
I just feel like I might have peaked. I peaked at 36 with that message in the airport as I waited 30 hours for a flight. It was like the best moment of my life surrounded by a super annoying day.
Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
And again, remember, we are taking next week off for spring break, so don't be alarmed when there's not a new episode next Monday. We will be back with a new episode on Monday, April 16th, hopefully with some good stories to tell from our trip.
Yeah, last time I came back from spring break, I wanted to get rid of all the toys in our house.
Yes, that's episode 45 if you want to go back and listen while we're away.
And of course, tell us what you do while you listen, like Jill's, who said she and her daughter live in different states, but they each listen on their morning commutes and then they compare notes later.
That's very sweet.
Bonding.
And check out younghouselove.com/podcast for the bonus links, photos, and info from this episode, like photos from our Austin trip and side-by-sides of how Sherry staged that homework room to sell.
And a video of that message from Luann. You can see her face delivering the loving words to me.
If you say so. Later.
Bye.
Anyway, happy birthday. Wishing you all the best and congrats.
Please edit that so it doesn't sound like I'm screaming at someone.
You'll have to do a little soft. Actually, can you do it softer?
Ah!
I would just like maybe avoid the sound approach to this.
I need to adequately express how crazy it is.